Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hi, this is Henry Gilroy, co-executive producer of Star Wars Rebels. You're listening to Aggressive Negotiations.
Hi, and welcome to a very special episode of Aggressive Negotiations. I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, just introducing, really, this panel that we had from DragonCon, as John Mills and I were able to go to DragonCon and be part of a few of the panels there. Very excited. This is the panel for the Clone Wars 10th anniversary special. We were celebrating 10 years of the Clone Wars, of course, as well as Clone Wars Saved. We had none other than Henry Gilroy as one of the hosts who helped create the Clone Wars, and so very excited to share this with you. Just wanted to remind you, of course, to if you are listening to Aggressive Negotiations for the first time, you can find us all over the place. We are on Twitter, so please follow us over at The Jedi Masters. You can also find us, of course, the whole network account, which is at Join Nerd Party. That's for the entire Nerd Party network that we are on. Both places that you should be following. So much going on in both places. And then, of course, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. We have thenerdparty.com. And, of course, if you would like to send us an email, go over to thenerdparty.com/contact. Choose a show. Choose Aggressive Negotiations, and that email comes to John and I, and we can talk to you that way. And last but not least, you can follow John and I on Twitter as well. He is Kessel Junkie, and I am Matt Rushing 02, and we would love to talk to you. I hope that you will enjoy, we both hope that you will enjoy this panel from DragonCon. A quick note, there was a quick and slight audio snafu, so you will hear the panel introduce themselves, and then there was a moment where the audio cut out, and you really didn't miss too much. I was just introducing our first topic on the Clone Wars, which is the beginning of the show and the creation of the show, and that's when you'll pick it up with Henry Gilroy, and we'll go from there. We hope you'll enjoy the panel.
It's right on the dot, and we've got a ton to cover, and I'm so excited to be here. I can't tell you how much of a fanboy I am for the Clone Wars. This is one of my favorite things in Star Wars. And before we really dive in, I want to let the panel introduce themselves first. My name is Matthew Rushing. I'm your host this evening. Hopefully we will be diving into the Clone Wars in a way that makes you nostalgic, and instead of going partying, you're going to go home and turn on Netflix because you're like, I need to watch this show again. I am the host of Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast, as well as the host of the 602 Club. But enough about me. Please, panel, introduce yourself.
I'm Henry Gilroy. I write Star Wars cartoons and comic books. I co-developed the CG animated Clone Wars back in 2005. And got a bunch of those credits, but love telling those stories and love to hear your questions and what you guys think. So.
You set that on the table?
just disregard the clones behind us.
My name's Brian Young. I do the Full of Sith podcast. I write about Star Wars for StarWars.com/film and sci-fi and a whole bunch of other places. And I've been covering Clone Wars since the very first movie came out.
My name is Tom Hutchins, known as Mandalore the Uniter, founder of the Mandalorian Mercs Costume Club, and huge Clone Wars fan extraordinaire.
The name's Rex, but you can call me Captain.
Woo!
My name is Melissa Pye. I am a very, very big Star Wars, Clone Wars fan. In fact, I do cosplay as Captain Rex.
It's kind of harkening back to the 10 years ago that we were actually started in the spring of 2005, so we started technically actually before Revenge of the Sith came out, and had our early meetings with George. So, I got the job because I think I had experience in action adventure and kind of large franchises. I'd worked on Batman animated series and Justice League, as well as some shows for Disney, Lilo and Stitch, and that kind of thing. And because I could do both action and comedy, I think that really helped. But also, George I think, approved me at the time because I had done the movie to comic adaptations for Star Wars, as well as some various Star Wars comic books he liked. So that I was the guy in it because of that reason. And yeah, I mean, you know, those early meetings, you know, George said, hey, you know, you guys are going to make this series. I'm retired. I really don't want to have anything to do with it. I'll see you maybe twice a year. But he can't let go. But once he saw our first test footage of Yoda walking through the shadows, he's like, oh, you guys are making cinema. And then we went from maybe we'll see him twice a year to two meetings a week. And it's really interesting. Dave and I, in the very beginning, decided, like, okay, we have to, like, just be creative, be who we are creatively, and not, like, worry, like, that he's a billionaire who could probably have us drown in his lake. So, because whenever there was a meeting time with George, there's a lot of people running around with their head cut off, like, just coffee, and you just not think about that, and you just always put the work first, and put the story first, and put the characters first, and that's really what we started. From the very beginning, we had no intention of doing a Star Wars cartoon. We were going to make Star Wars, because that's what every one of you deserves.
I wanted to ask the panel, for you guys, what was the first whiff that you got? Was it Celebration 3 with George announcing the idea that we're going to do more Clone Wars, jumping off of what... we got with the micro series, or was it something else?
I think that was certainly the first anybody'd heard about it, and I was trying to be as dialed in as I could. And I'd really liked the Genndy Tartakovsky series, even though I kind of thought it broke some of the things in the universe. I thought it was really good, and when they said, oh, we're doing a Clone Wars series, but it's going to be 3D animated, I honestly just kind of thought, so it's going to just look like that, but in 3D? Okay, whatever. I mean, it's more Star Wars. I'm in.
That's kind of where I thought too. I was like, well, I'd already seen the micro series. I'm like, well, they're just going to tell more of the same type of stories. It wasn't really until I went to Comic-Con in 2008 and was at the Star Wars Pavilion when they started showing the actual preview for it there at the Lucasfilm Pavilion, and I saw it up on the big screen there. And I'm like, oh my god, this is going to be freaking awesome!
It sort of snuck up on me. Yeah, I enjoy Star Wars. Happily minding my own business when my better half comes, hey, baby, you have to come and see this right now. All right. Okay, where are the rest of them? I need this now. I need this in my life now. So I'm not very patient. So I had to be patient and wait for the rest of it to come out.
As far as the movie went, though, I was really excited for it. My son was only like 3 when Revenge of the Sith came out, and when the Clone Wars movie came out, he was much older, and it was his first... I was able to take him to his first like Star Wars midnight thing that he remembered, and that was like a really big deal for him. Like, he wanted to wear a Jedi robe, and we went, and I mean, he didn't fall asleep through it. At midnight for a 5-year-old, that's huge. Yeah, that's
awesome. And the movie especially was after that, 5 espressos.
Yeah.
The movie was actually my first ever troop in a costume at a Star Wars movie. So that was pretty memorable.
I remember for the movie, you know, I was in grad school and I was working at Barnes & Noble. And I was seeing all the merchandise come out. And obviously, I'd loved the Genndy series as well. I just enjoyed having that lead up to the Episode 3 and you know, with the way it really played in with Revenge of the Sith, even though there's very many play-ins and they don't all work together really well with lots of books and but whatever, that's not the point. So I get to the movie and I'm with some friends, and the movie blew me away, honestly. I walked out of it thinking, my god, this is Star Wars, but it's just an animated form. And that joy just, then I had to wait. I was like, Melissa, I'm like, where's the series? I need the series now. I need to watch this now, because I enjoyed the movie so much, and I was so excited by what they were going to do, by what they showed in the movie. And I know, you know, lots of fans didn't love the movie. I was shocked by that, honestly.
I think for a lot of fans, the movie evened out after the series started.
Yeah.
So that they could understand the cadence of how the episodes worked and how they broke down. Because, I mean, that wasn't ever intended to be a movie, was it?
Right.
No, it's amazing. It was meant to be the pilot kind of three-parter. And you have to realize that was the very first thing that Lucasfilm Animation produced. So a brand new pipeline with a brand new way of creating animation. So, and when you look at kind of look back at the first early Disney cartoons, when they very first, the very first studio, most first studio productions are a little rough. So, even to up a couple years ago, Dave and I were talking about how, oh man, I wish I could go back and remake that. Because just the sophistication on our skills, and maybe we were drawing too much on our fanboyness and before we really kind of embraced what George wanted us to do. So I think it was a success. But yeah, the when you think about it, it's an 80-minute movie, and really I had only written 60 minutes of it. So I think it's well known, but episode 22 actually became the first 20 minutes of that.
What? Oh, yeah, with Cat and Mouse, or Hidden Enemy.
Right.
Yeah.
What were the biggest surprises that came into this for you, Henry? As you guys are creating the series, what were the biggest surprises that you found as you guys were embarking on something that was pretty new? I mean, you know, Star Wars has never been in this medium like this with, you know, the ideas that George has here. And what were the things that came up that you and Dave just weren't expecting that either were fortuitous or felicitous? Or
yeah, if you look at my Twitter, I'm not trying to post it, but I've actually kind of like did like the 10-year anniversary, and I kind of posted some behind the scenes stuff and pictures from the Bible and stuff. I think the first one is when he said, "Oh yeah, I want there to be a Padawan." Oh, we just assumed, oh well, you know, Anakin is going to be promoted to a Jedi, so Obi-Wan will get a new Padawan. And in the meeting, George is like, no, Anakin gets the Padawan. And we were stunned by that. But it really actually created so much more drama in the storytelling that we could explore as far as that. If you look at the screen, you'll see the very first image of Rada the Hutt. And the idea I had of Anakin having to carry him on his back. I borrowed from an old samurai film where a few samurai are trying to protect this baby who is in line for the throne from assassins. And that's kind of like it really inspired that first film, the whole plot of it. So that piece of paper there kind of like just lists a couple of ideas I had and my terrible drawing that Killian would laugh at me all the time at.
I've been told that like the way you talk to George Lucas is you talk through other movies in cinema, right? Is that kind of why Shogun's Shadow came up in that? It was like,
yeah, I never told him, hey, I'm gonna steal Shogun's Shadow. I just said, uh-huh. Hey, here's a story that actually is a familiar samurai story.
Yeah.
And he completely understood it. I think Shogun's Shadow was really about the bona fide leadership having a son. Where here it was like, oh, it's the son of a gangster.
Yeah.
So, but you're absolutely right. And a lot of times he would say that. He'd say like, oh, I want to do Body Snatchers, or I want to do Brain Snatchers, or I want to do Godzilla. And you guys can probably identify all the episodes you're talking about.
Was that something that specifically that George is in some ways trying to play with Star Wars at that point, figure out how far you can go with Star Wars and by adding all these different genre films that it's an opportunity for George to see, can I break this thing?
Oh, I never thought about that. I thought about like there's all these kinds of stories and genres he wants to see, and he knows that if he puts it in Star Wars, people will watch it. And our job is to actually make it great. So when you think about it, it's like, well, I'm not just trying to actually repeat a Star Wars convention again and again, but how do I actually do a horror story in Star Wars? Or how do I do a spy thriller or a heist in Star Wars? And I think we're seeing that a lot with the new films coming out. It's an exciting time now, but all of that comes from George and his love for cinema.
I would love to thank him for that, because it's how I convinced my kids to watch Alfred Hitchcock's Notorious with me because of Senate Spy. I was like, do you guys want to watch a movie that this was kind of based on? And they were like, sure, I guess. And they watched it, so thank you.
Well, I wanted to ask the panel here, you know, because one of the unique things about the Clone Wars is the fact that as the series is starting, we've got, one, the characterization of characters like Anakin and Obi-Wan that we know, we get Ahsoka. And then, of course, the animation style. So I just wanted to ask you, how did that sit with you guys? And was it something that you immediately fell in love with, or did you have to warm up to it?
I fell in love with it immediately. After a few episodes, you could see the character development even in the new characters that were introduced. So it felt like an ongoing serial from the 1920s where you get Hulk, you get a little bit of information, and you're like, I want some more, but you have to wait until the newspaper comes out the next week for it to come out. So watching the character development really hooked me in for the first few episodes.
Honestly, I was not a huge Ahsoka fan at the beginning. I felt she was a little bit too much like Anakin from Episode 2. There was a lot of like flippantness and a lot of, you know, the whole sky guy and things like that.
Like her being like R2-y?
No, I couldn't wrap my head around that for some reason. I don't know why. I couldn't. But as time progressed, I actually, you know, she sort of grew out of a lot of that, and it became more like, well, we're watching this child grow up. And it really started to make more sense. It kind of reminded me of me as a kid.
That was the thing I really latched on to immediately, was that Ahsoka was acting like a younger version of Anakin, mm-hmm. and he was treating her the way he wanted to be treated when he was a Padawan. And sometimes that's dangerous, right? You get into those Duel of the Droids episodes, and he's like, I'm super attached to R2, you go fight Grievous on yourself. You know, by yourself, because that's what Anakin would have wanted Obi-Wan to tell him, right? Obi-Wan would have been more cautious and said, like, no, you can't take Grievous by yourself. It's just a droid. But watching that relationship with Ahsoka, like, that clicked for me immediately. I wasn't necessarily the biggest fan of the art style until I got used to it, but I'm the sort who latches onto the story first. And so the art never bothered me, but it was like, oh, this is an interesting style. And it wasn't until halfway through season 1 that I was like, I really like what they're doing here, because you could see on the models, like, it looked like they were painted marionettes.
Yes.
Yeah. And that obviously is the Ralph McQuarrie influence, was, you know, Killian and Dave trying to basically say, how can we make this look like a moving Ralph McQuarrie painting to give you that mood and that atmosphere of it. But it's interesting you should say about the marionettes, even the style of it. There was definitely like a development process, and actually as you go along, the characters' design models did change. And I think primarily because early on there was concern that that if you saw Anakin as he looked like in a 2D series, in 3D he wouldn't really look like Hayden Christensen. You wouldn't recognize him as a character. So there's definitely some compromises in development, and that happens in every animated series I've ever worked on, I think, is the characters will evolve visually as you go along.
And one of the things that, for me, that I was really excited about is I immediately recognized the fact that, you know, it's just a Thunderbirds, you know, from England, you know, that it's that style, and they're supposed to look like marionettes in the first place. But then the thing that I actually loved was that I felt like it was a cartoon that actually took art seriously, because the characters are actually painted. It looked like an artist had gone in and painted each character and like each setting, and it just, there was a beauty to it that reminded me a lot of, you know, what Disney did in like something like Sleeping Beauty, where it just looks like art that's moving.
I think a lot of that painterliness really started to pop when Joel Aaron started working on the show.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah,
even before that, our early tests were basically taking a Ralph McQuarrie painting, separating it into levels, and putting on 2D elements and panning around it just to see how it would look. So you guys are absolutely right.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I think, you know, the other part of it that I loved is that George was taking a risk, you know, like he did with everything, which was to do something that hadn't been seen in animation before, especially, you know, kids' animation on a Saturday afternoon or morning.
Friday night.
Yeah, Friday night. Okay. Yeah.
It was too violent for Saturday morning.
Yeah. But I loved that idea of really challenging our ideas of what a cartoon could be, and the idea of what you said. We're making Star Wars. It's not for kids, which Star Wars is for kids. You know, George has said that over and over again. It's meant for 12-year-olds. So if you don't like that, you know, it's your fault. But this really is that thing. And one of the things that I think, you know, as we were talking about this whole idea of the way that George is very interested in introducing all these different genres, these types of films, even referencing specific films, I wanted to ask the panel, you know, Clone Wars became a series that really got defined by arcs. And I wanted to ask the panel, we don't have time to go through every single arc, but for you guys, what was the most impactful meaningful art for you, you know, and I'm really interested to see where you come.
Umbara.
Yeah. What was it that stood out about Umbara for you?
All the clones are getting nervous as you say that.
They're still behind me, aren't they? Umbara opens starting with, it feels very dark and very heavy, and then you're introduced to a Jedi who treats the clones as disposable, you know, meat droids, which during the rest of the series you really hadn't seen that sort of treatment of these characters. You've become really involved in watching their development and their personalities, and you know, as several of the Jedi had said, you may have the same face, but you feel different in the Force. And General Krell comes in, and he doesn't care. And it's, you start to realize, well, maybe the rest of the Star Wars universe doesn't really care about these guys dying for them anyway, and what could there be correlations with what's going on in the world at that time? You know, you're looking to somebody to be your leader, either personal or global, but do they see you as an individual or simply something to a tool? So watching the Umbara arc is just—it really just ties that in for me.
I guess I kind of have a two-parter on this one.
That's fine.
I have a least favorite and a most favorite. least favorite for me would have happened in season two when. I started getting all these messages. Why are Mandalorians pacifist? I'm at San Diego Comic Con.
I actually can answer that, but go on.
Okay, that's fine. No, I'm sure I know the answer to this already. I've heard it many times. But I'm at San Diego Comic Con 2009, and Mary Franklin, who was over Star Wars events at that time, she comes up to our table there from Merck's, and she says, hey, I need some Mandos down at the Lucasfilm Pavilion. We're getting ready to throw up a quick debut of, we're going to throw up some video of season two, and some Mandalorian stuff. And I said, okay. So we go down there, and we're standing on the pavilion, we're striking our pose, and all of a sudden it says, welcome to Mandalore, home of the peaceful Mandalorians. And I'm like, it's like I could hear the record player in my head go, I'm like, what? And it didn't really bother me because I know things have a way of writing themselves in the Star Wars universe. It always does. But the amount of messages that I got from Fandalorians, from fans people were asking me, what are they doing? What's wrong? I'm like, I don't have the answers to these questions. You know?
I dress as a Mandalorian. I don't play one on TV.
I know, right? I'm not really a Mandalorian in real life. Why are you asking me these questions? And then, of course, season five, when we get to the Lawless, and everything, you know, everything works itself out. And I was lucky enough to have a nice conversation with Dave Filoni at Celebration 5. It was probably 15 minutes, he and I walking. He said, don't worry about it. He said, everything's going to work itself out in the end. And I had complete confidence after that. And for the rest of the time of Clone Wars, up until I saw season five, I knew that it would work itself out, and you know what? It sure did. It really did.
So that was your least and most favorite?
That was my least and most favorite.
Okay. For me, I think the ending with Ahsoka is probably one of the most powerful arcs I've ever seen on TV.
Yeah.
But the one I keep coming back to just because, like, I really love diving deep into the mythology of Star Wars is the Mortis arc.
Yeah.
The Mortis arc has so much depth, and it's not even like, I don't even know what they planned for it. I don't know, like, if they intended to know what it was going to mean. But if you go back and you watch Mortis, and then you watch all the stuff with World Between Worlds, and you go back and watch Return of the Jedi, and you go back and watch Last Jedi, like, I think it's apparent Rian Johnson watched it before he was writing Last Jedi. And it just has this really fascinating ripple effect in what the philosophy of the Force can be. And I think that's always my favorite stuff that Dave had done through the course of the Clone Wars was George or whoever was responsible for that, but deepening the mystery of the Force.
Obviously, I love Mortis. And it's one of my favorite things. I just rewatched it a couple of days ago just because it's something that every time I watch, I get something more out of. quickly, I'll say I honestly think that also the Yoda arc at the end, where George specifically is diving into what this all means, the importance of Force ghosts, why Yoda is going to become one, the importance of what he'll play afterwards, what that means then for who Qui-Gon Jinn is, how awesome he is, what that means for Obi-Wan Kenobi, for how awesome he is, the fact that he's given this gift. Like, this is not a gift that everybody is given. This is a very special gift. And so, like, I loved that arc for the way that it portrayed that, and the fact that Yoda had to finally deal with the fact that he had a side that he didn't want to deal with, and that had actually been a problem. By not embracing the fact that he still had a darkness, it had actually hurt him. And I thought that was, I mean, what a great message for anyone. But honestly, the arc that, one of the arcs that sticks out with me the most, and it's one of my favorites, and it's very early, and that's why it sticks with me so much, is it is that Mandalorian arc where Obi-Wan Kenobi is my favorite character, and to learn that he had a love that he gave up, and he followed the rules, and but that love was still something that he would have left the Jedi Order for if she would have asked. And then of course you tie that again where Tom was with everything that happens in those Lawless episodes, and it's gorgeous storytelling, and you realize there's so much more to a character that you didn't realize was there. And that's something I think that the Clone Wars really excelled at in all of these arcs, was giving us an opportunity to take everything we thought we knew about Obi-Wan Kenobi or Anakin Skywalker and say, you don't know. We got more. And for being able to say, hey, you know what? We're going to challenge your preconceptions about what Mandalorians are and say, there are cycles to every
society. It goes to that fact where it's like not every Corellian is a smuggler.
Yes, it's not a monoculture.
Exactly. Could you imagine if Corellia was entirely just smugglers?
It's like the black market. I think every hut is a hut.
maybe Rod of the Hut turned a new leaf.
No.
He's a hut. A hut is a hut is a hut. Okay.
Okay.
Actually, it's funny. Can I answer this too?
Yeah, go for it, man.
I like the story. I like the stories.
No, I'm sorry.
You guys can say no. I like the stories that expose character, and especially the characters that we love. And I think you hit on it, Matt. And when I'm asked this question all the time, I'm like, gosh, kind of depends on what mood I'm in. Like, which kid do I like the best? So I really liked the Ryloth arc, the first one, because that was a place for us with Waxer and Boyle to actually show a humanity to the clones. And showing compassion, where these guys, basically all they are, or all they've been trained to be, is mobile gun platforms, and here they're having to express this love for life. And I think that's one of those stories I love. I think there's great adventure in it, too. But it speaks really well, and actually we expand on it as the series goes on. I was going to actually talk about the first four story arcs that I pitched. The first story arc I pitched was the Castle of Doom series, which is what made up the film. The second story arc I pitched was the Malevolence trilogy, which is really a callback to George's love for like movies like Sink the Bismarck and a submarine movie. And the third was the Duel of the Droids series, which was really like a simple personal story about Anakin, and you understand his attachment for something as simple and as seemingly insignificant as a droid, but it shows who he is as a person, somebody who has great empathy. And then the fourth story, which was killed, I called it Warriors of Beskar, and it was actually the Jedi were trying to stop Count Dooku from acquiring Beskar armor that he was going to basically melt down and use to make battle droids out of.
Oh, man.
Oh.
Wow, that's
awesome.
So these battle droids would have been
impervious
to ray blasters. Nice. So hold on.
I was going to say they stole some moments from that for later in some other stories.
It is. So yep. I just wanted you to say, when I delivered these premises, it was two pages, George went and checked off. He liked the Castle of Doom hut kidnap story. He loved the Duel of the Droids because he had a dog, and the dog's name was Rex. Not kidding. Originally, I had Clone Commander Alpha, and he named him Rex. First time he saw it, he scratched out Alpha and put Rex. Because if you know, Alpha was the Clone Commander in the comic books, and I think in the Karen's books, too. Mm-hmm. And then Malevolent story. He's like, oh, I love this story, too. This is fantastic. And then he turned the page and got to Mandalorian. He just looked at it, and I was like, oh, he's reading too long. I'm in trouble. And he looked up, and he looked at Tom, and he said, Mandalorians are pacifists. And then we started production.
And my heart bled. And my heart bled right then. It bled.
And I actually have an email from Dave at something for like, it says season end of season one, season two, or whatever. He's like, literally in caps at the bottom of things, like, oh, we're choosing the next writers for season two, blah, 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 blah. By the way, in all caps, no Mandalorian stories, period.
Aww.
Because I think really that actually speaks well to the series in that the series itself, the production, wasn't ready to do it. And I think also how those stories unfolded actually really needed a very important reason. And I think Obi-Wan's story connected to the Mandalorians is a brilliance. It's brilliant.
Was there anything for you guys on the panel that just watching through the series that an arc or an episode that just surprised you with something you just thought you'd never see in Star Wars?
A remake of Kagamusha casting Jar Jar Binks as the Shadow Warrior?
Oh.
I never knew how badly I needed that. That's a great episode.
You love Jar Jar.
I do like Jar Jar. I do. Well, that's not a secret.
I'll answer that. I never thought that we would see Gungans be such badasses and be the only people who could take down Grievous until Obi-Wan in episode 3. They take him down. Yeah, so all you Gungan haters and Jar Jar haters, yeah, they were responsible for that.
In those episodes.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah.
I think probably I don't know if it's more surprised, it was just more personal, was the in the Lost episodes, the Fives episodes.
Mm, yeah.
Being a vet myself, that was very powerful. I mean, I can't watch those now without crying. I mean, seriously, those are very powerful episodes. Very powerful.
When Ventress decides she's going to kiss the clone before she kills him.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I never thought I'd see that in a cartoon.
You know,
and it still startles me.
I wasn't sure Rex was going to live when she was choking him. Like, I was like, this dude's gone.
He's toast.
Yeah. That's the thing that I think was so exciting about the Clone Wars is not only did it give us these amazing arcs, but I think, you know, it gave us things that we didn't know we always needed. You got what you never knew you always wanted, which was Ahsoka.
Aww.
And so I just wanted, obviously, we could wax eloquent, I think, about Ahsoka for years and years and years, but favorite characters that the Clone Wars gave us, maybe minus Ahsoka, because we could wax eloquent about her forever.
I guess I get to go first.
We're all looking at you, kid.
Why, thanks, Tom. I'll remember this next year. It's a toss-up between Rex and Wolf. It's just the different character developments on... You can stop waving now, Squiggle. The different ways the two characters developed, I mean... Rex did lose most of Torrent Company, but Wolf lost everybody in the Malevolent, that particular arc. It was just the people left on that ship. So just watching how two identical people in different circumstances develop their personalities. So clones are my favorite.
I think really, you know, obviously, Satine's probably... is my favorite non-Ahsoka character. I mean, I loved Ahsoka. I love what she became. But Satine, to me, she fought for what she felt was right. And she fought for her beliefs. And she really fought for the direction of the culture of her people and where she felt like it really needed to go. But I think she also saw how when you're overzealous on either way, it leads to destruction. But I think she may have saw it a little too late. And just watching her grow as, you know, as a leader was a big, you know, it was one of my favorite, I guess probably my favorite thing about Clone Wars as a character, because she just went from such a blonde-haired blue-eyed girl, to being, you know, more of a warrior herself right at the end. I mean, she was fighting hard for her people, and I thought that was great as a character.
Well, since I can't say Ahsoka, I've got three that I'll mention very quickly. The first was Cut, the clone deserter, right? Because episode really started to address the ethical ramifications of breeding an army that I think Attack of the Clones kind of glossed over. The second, just walked in the room, it's Hondo Ohnaka.
Hondo!
Who doesn't love Hondo Ohnaka? And the third is that Clone Wars brought Darth Maul back to us.
Yeah.
And his story was deep, and it added so much to the character. And, I mean, I already thought Phantom Menace was great, but it made it, like, even better. And to see how much of Palpatine's plan had been in the works that it had rubbed off on Maul, to see Maul start to put together his own grand plan that's this vague shadow of Palpatine's, which is why I love the name, the Shadow Collective, so much. It felt very symbolic of that, and I really loved his arc overall as it went into Rebels 2.
You know, I think for me, the one of the characters that really means a lot to me, and it's because I wasn't expecting to love this character so much, and mainly it's because of the arc that they go on, is Asajj. You know, the when you watch the arc that she goes on, her and Ahsoka are basically mirrors for each other, and they have these interesting masters. And you really see the impact of Asajj having a master who really doesn't care about her too much. He actually may care about her more than we think he does, but it's so messy, you know, and it's all that dark side stuff, and he's pushing her away most of the time, and he's just kind of a jerk to her. And so, and when he cuts her off, yeah, I'm sorry, dude. When you cut her off, it's just... It's not cool.
He's behind
and the
you.
Pain and the pain
she
in her.
She wants it, she'll take it.
Yeah. But then to see her then team up with... when you see her team up with Obi-Wan, you know, they had that fight in the first movie, and it's such a great fight. They have such great chemistry together. They're flirting. It's awesome. Obi-Wan's definitely a playa.
Was that something you intended, their chemistry, or was that something they did in the booth? Between Obi-Wan and Asajj.
That was always interesting. You have to realize Obi-Wan knows exactly what he's doing, and he basically is trying to basically manipulate her emotions to see if he can. So that game is really about finding out just how disciplined she is.
That's awesome. Fascinating. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
I mean, I love that. And then I guess, you know, seeing her basically in many ways become more of a good guy. You know, I mean, she's a little bit gray, but just to watch that happen and watch her and Ahsoka work together, these two people who have been disappointed by their masters, and I thought that was what made the Ahsoka arc so powerful, is that you have these two characters working together who feel like they've been betrayed by their masters. And I thought that that was really, really interesting. And so it made her one of the best arcs in the show, and I don't know if I did not expect that at all when they brought her over from the Gendy series.
How many people in here like bawled like an idiot when you finished Dark Disciple?
Yeah, and that made that story even more powerful to see her make that full arc. And not only that, but I have to say that novel, when Obi-Wan chastises the Jedi for what they have done with Asajj, it is one of the best written things I've ever... I mean, Chrissy Golden nailed it, and that script was perfect.
Based on those Katie Lucas drafts.
Yeah, and Katie Lucas really understood, I think, just ways to really get at your heart, which, you know, I didn't expect to think that the Witches of Dathomir could be so cool and so interesting. And I think that's one of the things that, for me, honestly, the way the Clone Wars adds to the saga and to the legacy of Star Wars is phenomenal. I mean, when you think about how many things that they add to what we know of as Star Wars today and played with, I think it's phenomenal. And then, of course, Rebels picks that up. So I wanted to ask the panel, Henry, I want you to answer this question. What was the thing that you were most excited that you got to add to the Star Wars canon?
Definitely Ahsoka. But actually, your previous photo, just the idea of, oh, hey, here's Plo Koon, and here's a moment of Plo Koon's being a Jedi Master you never would expect of him being one who basically went out and found these Jedi kids, but also giving voice to a character like, you know, Plo Koon. Originally, we had tried giving him sort of a voice like we were trying to cast Sonny Chiba, and we had kind of like thought maybe he should have a very thick Japanese accent, and maybe even some Japanese sounding like noises would come out of him. And then the more we thought about it, we thought like, gosh, maybe he's more, because he is so old in the legends, that he's more patriarchal, or not patriarchal, more paternal. And a father figure, and if you think about a father figure who's coming to, collect, a Jedi talented child and bring to the temple to realize their potential, I think that just, like you were saying, all these existing characters you saw in the movies as background characters and really expanding them out. All of the clones that we added personality to in Shiny, in the Rookies episode, which was originally titled Shinies. Echo, Fives, Heavy. I mean, I think just, and actually, full credit to George on that. He's like, let's do an episode with just the clones. And we just thought, oh, we thought this was a Jedi show. And so it was great to actually have that freedom to try all sorts of different kinds of stories. But I'm proud of every single character I had the fortune of writing on, just because when it comes down to it, I think they all feel like Star Wars characters. And like you were saying, we're broadening, adding to the legacy in the saga, really. So, I don't know. I like to hear the fans' favorites. People say, like, who's your favorite?
Cad Bane, yeah.
Absolutely. What about Goldie? I don't hear any Goldie lovers. Does people know who Goldie is? You guys know who Goldie is?
Oh, yeah,
the traitor droid.
Okay, yeah, the traitor droid. Yeah.
Let me just strap this droid onto you and then kick you off a wall.
But I think it's... Right, 99's great.
Yeah.
I think what's awesome is that probably in a different level of everyone in the room, you have like a different hierarchy of who's your favorite character. And I think that's actually a great success that says that, hey, wait, this series had something for everybody. Like, I really love Satine, and I really love Hondo. And it's like, well, depending on which day or which episode, I might like them first or second, so...
I think for me, one of the things that I loved about Star Wars prior to the prequels and the Clone Wars is how all of the ancillary material added to the world so that when you went back and watched the movies, you could look at them in a different light. And the Clone Wars series deepened the world and expanded the world in a way that changed Attack of the Clones, to a smaller extent Phantom Menace, but absolutely fundamentally altered the way I watched Revenge of the Sith. And the fact that you all were able to take a piece of art that's hundreds of hours long and add meaning to something I already found and derived so much meaning from is what I loved about it so much, that it added to my experience and the mythology of Star Wars for me.
I'm a fan of all things Star Wars, really. I mean, I love all the way down to Jar Jar Binks. I won't admit it too often in public.
It's just because I'm here.
Yeah.
I mean, we're recording this. I'm sorry.
That's okay. But I love pretty much everything about Star Wars that's come into contact with me in my life. And, you know, the Clone Wars for me really, I mean, it really felt like what I didn't get to experience of Star Wars as a kid, because I came into Star Wars at Return of the Jedi. I was too young to see, Star Wars in the theater, and I was, or A New Hope, and I was, well, it was just Star Wars, I guess, when it was first released. And I was too young to see Empire Strikes Back, just by a little tiny bit. So all I really got to see was Return of the Jedi, and then the prequels came out right as I was, finishing up my tour in the Navy, so... And I did get to see the special edition, but still, I mean, I had figures and things like that, and that's how I grew up replaying the lightsaber battle between Obi-Wan Kenobi's figure and Darth Vader's figure with the little toothpick things that came out of the hands. That was, you know. So Clone Wars allowed me to kind of go back in time to this part of my childhood and relive Star Wars that I didn't really get to do that much as a child. And it was great. I mean, it made me feel like a kid again.
I really appreciated the depth to the universe that the Clone Wars gave us in both dress and artistic styles based on the different planets, how their buildings differed, how their cultures differed. You got to see not just the static rebellion with some aliens versus the Empire wearing black suits. In Clone Wars, you got to see just so many different planets and their denizens and their art. Even in the war-torn episodes where you're seeing destruction, you're still seeing that culture's art and, you know, kind of how they think. So I thought that brought it, made it feel more real. You got that lived in depth to the series.
When I think about the legacy of the Clone Wars, it's kind of ridiculous. I mean, Mandalorians go on in Rebels. Ahsoka and Rex go on in Rebels. Maul and the Son of Dathomir, Solo, Rebels. Crime Syndicates you see in Solo. Hondo you see in Rebels. Mortis Gods you see in Rebels. Lux Fonteri, spoiler alert, you see in Inferno Squad 2. Force Trees from the Jedi Temple that we see there in some of those Yoda arcs. Shattered Empire. It means... Saw Gerrera. I was just about to get there, but thank you. The fact that Anakin Skywalker, think about this, Anakin Skywalker is the one who is responsible for bringing down the Empire before he knows it, because it's his idea to train militias to fight the Separatists, and that plants the seed that will destroy the Empire. Like, that is awesome. It's his fault. It's his fault.
Well, and it was a line that the Jedi told Saw in that episode that Jyn repeats in Rogue One as they're about to steal the Death Star plans. I love those little connections like that.
And I mean, the thing about this is when you start to think about the way that this series has really impacted the saga, it just continues. And I think the thing that we're all excited about is the fact that it does continue. Yeah, that's right. Clone Wars saved. Hashtag. And the Clone Wars is coming back. And so I just wanted to ask the panel, what was your reaction to finding out that this was happening?
I learned I was a super soprano. There was a lot of screaming, a lot of texting and calling people, and all of us screaming together on calls. There were no words. It was just screaming.
I had to have people come in my office at work and ask if I was okay. Because I watched the trailer on YouTube, and I'm like, oh, my God! And, I mean, you know, I work in a small office. And people were like, are you okay? Or are you having a stroke or something? I'm like, maybe. Maybe. Let me have my stroke.
Leave me alone. I'm having a moment here.
Yes.
I was in the room at San Diego when they announced it, and it was really fascinating because you could feel the energy in the room shift as people slowly started to realize what the trailer actually meant, right? Like it sort of just buzzed around the room in a way that I can't describe. The only other better reaction I'd seen at a celebration, the two were Thrawn's appearance at Celebration Europe and the Chewie were home thing. Those are the only two moments that even came close to matching the energy in the room and how just stunned everyone was. There was not a closed mouth in the house because everyone's jaw had dropped.
What was your reaction, Henry?
Oh, it was probably like 7 months earlier than you. And it was actually one of those things where I walked up and I heard blah, 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 blah. I can't tell it, repeat any of the words. And I was like, why are you guys talking about blah, 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 blah? Oh, I know why you're talking about blah, blah, blah. You're talking about because blah, blah, blah. Okay. And then actually, so I knew, but I didn't know exactly the date. But actually, I was in the room too for that. And it was great actually because I think the way our information works today, that it spread like wildfire, and the enthusiasm was fantastic. So I think you guys have really good reason to be excited. So.
So, I absolutely love that I work from home because I like did a happy dance in my office.
Naked?
Because, no. Okay. No. Everybody always asks that. Do you work in your pajamas?
Wait, happy dance just implies naked.
No, I was just ecstatic.
How did we get to this place?
Yeah,
Wait. What?
Nothing. Please continue.
This is why the restraining order, you guys.
Me?
So the fact that this was happening, and, you know, I will be honest, obviously, you know, I think a lot of us felt when the Clone Wars was canceled, it was like a heartbreak because I had known that they had so much planned. And the fact that they decided it was okay to start to do this, to allow Dave to finish what he had started. Thank you, Kylo Ren, for that line. And so I really appreciated that. And not only that, but I think it's a testament to what this show came to mean. And what I loved about it is it wasn't just, you know, old folks that were excited, but it was a whole generation that had grown up with the Clone Wars and had it cut short, and it's finally getting to be finished for all of us now. And I think that that's a really cool gift that Lucasfilm is giving us, and I really appreciate them for that, that they are trusting Dave Filoni to go back and to do this, and it's a great gift. And I mean, you know, we are going to be, you know, getting Disney Direct, you know, whenever that comes out, because we're going to want to watch these episodes. And I think it's anecdotal story. So the day the Clone Wars is announced, my wife was gone on her annual National Guard training, and which she was gone for a month, which sucked. But I went to a local burger joint, try to make myself feel better. I'm wearing this T-shirt, which thank God for her universe. Which is funny, because a couple of months ago, I'd met Ashley, and she's like, we've got a whole Clone Wars line coming out. And I was like, yes, I wonder what that means. Does that mean something? And then, of course, you know, this happens. And so I walk into the burger joint, and I'm not expecting anybody to care that I'm wearing a Clone Wars T-shirt, because, you know, guys behind the counter, two guys are like, Clone Wars! Did you see today? I'm like, yes! So we're like the guys yelling in the burger joint, and everybody's just looking at us like we're crazy. So, I mean, that's the kind of excitement that this show inspired, you know, and the fact that it's coming back is fantastic. And honestly, it's coming back because fans never gave up on it, you know, because fans loved it, and it became something that we didn't want to let go of, in a good way, I think. And so Bethany is going to come right over here in the middle, and we are going to do some Q&A. So I would love for you to line up and get your questions in.
Or more cynically, Disney knew that we would all pay for the streaming service if they put those 12 episodes.
Of course. Of course. Of course. You are absolutely right.
That's exactly what you're asking.
Somebody had to convince, like, what do we got? Well, we got this.
Okay. Yeah,
we've, all right, we've Logan, I see that you have stalked Henry Gilroy
again. Great.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask
you
about
that. Hold on a second. Just everyone should realize this is... This is the unnamed Inquisitor, third brother.
Yeah,
been stalking me for 5 days now.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because you now have like a security division behind
you
and stuff.
Thanks, guys. He's really fast.
So anyways, my question is, in Clone Wars, we were introduced to the Jedi Temple guards and stuff like that. And... in there, when Barriss turned to the dark side, we saw like a full squad of them come out to assist Anakin in taking her out. But when Order 66 happened, there were none of them. So I'm just thinking, like, when Padawan turns evil, send a whole entire squad out there, evil Sith Lord and army of clone troopers storming and murdering everybody. Yeah, no, it's fine. Just leave them. Like, so, like, where were they during that whole scene?
That's a great question.
There's, I mean, the leader of the Grand Inquisitor was one of them, so it's very likely maybe he turned there as well, and maybe he took care of those guards, or Anakin disintegrated them.
No, actually, that's exactly what happened. So basically what happened...
Well, there you go.
is the Grand Inquisitor was a temple guard, and he knew Anakin, and then the clones were on their way, So he betrayed the other temple guards, murdered them, and opened the door for Anakin.
Yeah. Man, I'm so glad Kanan killed his...
He kind of killed himself, though.
Yeah, he did kind of let go.
I'm more terrified of Vader. Bye.
I'm just curious from the audience, how many folks were following Brian's tweets when they announced the Clone Wars are coming back?
Before I get to the question, I just want to say, at the beginning of Clone Wars, I was one of those people that really, really disliked Ahsoka. And I think it's amazing through the whole thing because, like, not only did I, of course, start liking her a lot more, like, she ended up becoming probably one of my top five favorite Star Wars characters ever. The alchemy that happens, the character development and everything like that was absolutely amazing. And it blows me away. So just wanted to say that. Another thing I wanted to get to, and this was kind of dropped a little bit when you... Yeah, well, the question is... you know, you were talking before about George kind of referencing different movies and everything like that and making familiar things into Star Wars. And the thing that I liked about Clone Wars is it brought Star Wars back. So, like, you had the Umbara campaign, which is very much a callback to, like, Oliver Stone and Platoon. You had the second invasion of Geonosis, which had that long uncut shot, which was very much like The Longest Day. And I wondered if there was any, just from consuming war media and everything like that, if there was anything that maybe y'all as a panel were wanting to see, like maybe like a Hamburger Hill or like a Tora 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 or something of that nature.
No, that's a really great question. And I think one of the things that they excelled at in the Clone Wars was giving us so many different types of war stories. Like you mentioned the fact that, you know, Sink the Bismarck is what
the Malevolence,
you know, Malevolence
trilogy.
Are. Mm-hmm. And I think the Clone Wars does such a good job of picking its time to go back to that really intense war scene. And I you know, honestly, there wasn't anything I felt like that I missed from those war films because I feel like they did such a good job. I mean, there were so many scenes where the beginning of the Clone Wars movie where you first see the clones, and that clone just gets smacked in the face with the and dies like that. I was like, this ain't your kids. This is Star Wars, you know? And it felt very much like, you know, Saving Private Ryan at the beginning when they're storming Normandy. That's exactly what's happening there. So I felt like any time that they went to a war genre film and did kind of a different aspect of that, you guys nailed it.
Yeah, it was always about the characters and where we could expand that. Definitely, you know, there, if you've watched the Band of Brothers, you'll see lots of influences from Band of Brothers across Clone Wars, whether it's a camaraderie between the troops and the clones or how they're interacting with the people that they're supposed to be protecting. So, I think we did every story we could probably.
The only one I wanted to see was Apocalypse Now, but we got that in Shatterpoint.
Yeah.
All right, my question is actually for everybody in the room. And the question is, just over 10 years ago, on August 30th, 2008, Steve Sansweet was here and in his Star Wars panel, and he debuted Ambush and Rising Malevolence. And I'm just curious if there's anybody in this room that was actually here at Dragon Con when we saw those first two episodes, other than...
Woo!
Woo, Paula!
Hello, everyone. So Clone Wars was a brilliant series for so many reasons, but I feel like one of the particular aspects that's not talked enough about was the brilliant presence of its bald characters, such as Asajj Ventress, such as that one episode where Obi-Wan shaved his own head.
Okay.
And
okay. Okay.
Also
all right.
Commander Rex.
I just want you to look behind me. You see this?
Yes.
This is security.
But wouldn't it Clone Wars have been better if Anakin shaved his head, if even Ahsoka shaved her head somehow?
Okay. Ahsoka didn't have hair. She was already bald.
All right, Ahsoka lives.
My name's Chris. I'm from Florida. Obviously, I love Ahsoka, but I don't want to ask a question about her. Do you believe Clone Wars, for new people watching, would be best watched in order or in a preferred viewing order? Do you understand what I'm asking?
Yeah, in order of release versus
who are
time?
You asking?
Yeah, chronological or
versus
order.
A recommended viewing yes. order mm-hmm. for new people.
I'll just answer for me personally. And my co-host on Aggressive Negotiations, John Mills, totally disagrees with me. So you can take this for whatever you want. But I personally like chronological order. I think it's so cool to watch how, even though these were out of sync in the sense that they did episodes later on that were prequels to something or sequels to something, the way that it all works together. And when you watch the entire saga that way, I did that with my wife because she had never seen Clone Wars when we got married, and we did the entire series that way. It was phenomenal to be able to do that. So I really enjoy that. But the great thing about Clone Wars is you can do it in release order. You can do it chronologically. You can do it, and it works any way you want to do it. So.
I think it depends on the person, right? What do they want to get out of the series? What are their tastes? And you have to know that person to know what's going to be best. If they're going to sit through everything, then I think chronological is probably the best. But if you know that Ahsoka is the character they're going to respond to, curate a list of Ahsoka. If they're Maul fans, curate a list of Maul episodes. And really get them into it that way. And then more often than not, they'll want to go back and watch everything. But it really kind of depends on what their interest in Star Wars is. And Clone Wars was able to provide like a buffet table of all the different sorts of flavors of Star Wars you'd want. So you can... it's going to take some more work on your part.
You want to melt their brain? Watch them in production order.
Oh.
And then try to figure out how to put them in chronological order. Never mind airing order.
Thank you, brother.
All right, so Rebels, Star Wars Rebels was brought up a few times during the panel, and I was just wondering, what are your thoughts on Rebels, but also the new Star Wars series called Resistance? I'm personally not really a fan of Rebels, and I think Resistance looks awful. That's just my opinion. But I would like to see how the panel responds.
You could take your mask off if you want.
It's absolutely no surprise the person in the Guy Fawkes mask gets up to talk about. No, I think Rebels is great. I think Rebels is almost like Clone Wars 2.0 in that it finishes all the threads of Clone Wars, or many of those threads. And I think Resistance looks like this really cool spin-off of Robotech meets Star Wars. Yes. And I'm all in on it. And I think some of the best storytelling that we've ever had on screen came out of Rebels. I don't think I would put Twilight of the Apprentice and Twin Suns up with any of the movies.
I will say I remember when Clone Wars Rebels came out, and part of me, I'll admit, there was a little bit of chip on my shoulder because Clone Wars was gone. But I think one of the things that surprised me the most in my rewatch, I did a whole rewatch of all the animated shows this year to get ready for these panels, was the fact that those characters in Rebels, I was crying by the end because of what happens to them. And in the same way that I was crying at the end when Ahsoka left, and it broke my heart.
Because they're your family.
Yeah, they are my family. And I think, you know, I won't judge Resistance until I see it, because the same I can't judge a show by 60 seconds of a preview, which may or may not really show me much of what the show is about. So I personally have to give even movies that I see in the theater, right? You have to do that as well. Like the trailer may have been awful, but the movie was freaking awesome. So, you know, I try to give things enough time, and if I still don't like it, that's fine. It's okay not to like things.
Amen.
You know. So, but it's also not okay to then treat others that like things like they're idiots because they like something.
I mean, but I'm the kind of person who would want to know. Absolutely. I'd want to know why you like the Clone Wars, but why don't you like Rebels? I'm just curious.
When it comes to Rebels, I find that it has difficulties balancing tone between one of the things I loved about Clone Wars is that each episode, each arc had its own tone. And it was sometimes it was very adult, sometimes it had comedy, but every single time the tone felt very balanced and very fluid. In Rebels, I don't think the tone is kind of misconstrued. For example, you have episodes like Twilight of the Apprentice, where you have the Inquisitors flying around with their helicopter lightsabers.
You just need to suspend your disbelief for that.
All right, well then, and then suddenly you have Maul murdering all three main Inquisitors in like a blink of an eye. So I think the tone in some of the comedy, some of the pacing doesn't really match with me, but I love Clone Wars because it has a better time doing that tone and telling those stories.
That's a great point. I the only thing I'd say in argument is Clone Wars really gave you the tapestry of the entire war. So you had those gritty war stories and you could do a lighter story that had comedy in it or a spy thriller, where Rebels was really following one family. And so we really wanted those stories to feel consistent in tone. Rather, but there was actually as the character of Ezra matured, because it was his story, so did the stories mature, so did the threats become more powerful against him, so did the stakes go up.
I just wanted to announce now Brandy did give me permission to go over a little bit, but let's try to make the questions as rapid fire as possible and see how many we can get through.
First of all, I just want to say the Zillow Beast episodes are some of my favorites. Yeah. At the end of the last one, we had that kind of horror story Godzilla sequel hook. Did you ever plan on making more Zillow Beast stories and they just never panned out, or was it just part of the genre?
I think, as Steve Melching and Dave Filoni, Filoni is such a Godzilla fan, I'm sure that the Zillow Beast would be in every single episode if he could get it. I'm not kidding. He would have probably called it Zilla Beast Wars. You're right.
Hi. I just wanted to ask both Henry and the whole panel about the importance of Padme, the importance of Padme in the Clone Wars, and how it expanded what we saw of her in the prequels, how it built and changed your thoughts on her. And I just am really curious about any thoughts that were put into writing her, maybe differently, or expanding her while writing about her.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the first story that I worked on to where I went on to develop, like that she was more than just, okay, someone who sat in the Senate and voted yay or nay, was the Bombad Jedi episode where she's like taking a risk by heading into enemy territory. And the idea of, I think George gave us direction early on that he wanted her to be a diplomatic action hero. So she is a super capable, intelligent negotiator, but she can handle a gun. So when she needs to. So I think as far as that, but that also has to do with being a well-rounded character that we all like, and we like her not for just one quality, that she can fly with a lightsaber, but she can do other things too.
I love that she had a life and a history outside of what we saw. Like, I thought all the stuff with Clovis was so fascinating to see that she, in Attack of the Clones, it almost feels like between Paulo and Anakin, Padme has no life or relationship whatsoever with anyone, and this really filled in a lot of those blanks and complicated her life in really interesting ways. I mean, aside from all of the stuff that you brought up, which sounds awesome.
I thought what was great about the Clone Wars is that it just did everything that my imagination thought Padme already was. You know, like, I never expected her not to be this, because watching The Phantom Menace, she's so kick-ass. You know, and part of that is, you know, for me, I just understood what George was trying to do with her as a character and thematically and all those things, you know, throughout the Attack of the Clones and Phantom Menace. And there was that. There's that time period we just didn't get to see. And what we get to see is that, yeah, she's amazing character, and one of the hallmarks of the series, I think, is the way that it began to expand female characters. You know, Clone Wars really starts that, and I would challenge anybody by saying, look, Ahsoka is the reason that you have Rey. Ahsoka is the reason that you have all that you have now, because she opened those doors to show us that it doesn't matter what the gender of the character is, as long as they're well-written, we will respond to them. And she gives us that. And so the Clone Wars starts that. We get that in Rebels with Hera and Sabine, and it goes farther all the way into, you know, Rogue One, Solo, in the sequel trilogy. So we have Ahsoka, I think, to thank for that. So
thank you.
I would just add one thing.
And Padme.
That, I mean, we definitely took inspiration from Carrie Fisher and Leia.
Wow. So. She'll always be in our hearts.
Amen.
Okay, so the one thing I wanted to say is that Star Wars Rebels, but one thing I did enjoy is that they were able to bring a character that was originally non-canon back into canon for as in Grand Admiral Thrawn. So I was wondering to ask, in the new season of Clone Wars, is there a particular character that was originally non-canon that you want to see to be brought back into canon, or a particular story that was non-canon that you hope they can bring it back into a canon for, but you know, in its own, but sort of, but you know, with a few changes and so forth.
What do you think, Melissa?
Oh gosh,
is there anything that you're looking forward to or hoping they'll do in the next season?
I just want proper closure.
Yeah.
It did end on an abrupt note, but as far as things being brought in from Legends or the extended universe, there's so much there that it's really hard to pick just one thing. The inclusion of Grand Admiral Thrawn, I think, was brilliant. I'd like to see a little bit more, perhaps, of him. When did he actually start stepping into the picture? Because he shows up as a Grand Admiral.
There's some books.
I can't read. I'm a clone.
I think the bigger opportunity for bringing in Legends material isn't Clone Wars. I think Clone Wars is kind of pretty well its own thing now. I think that opportunity, we're going to see a lot more of that stuff coming out after Episode 9 is out, and they start exploring that time between Episode 6 and Episode 7. So I'm not sure Clone Wars is exactly the right place for any of those wish... I mean, I can come out and say, like, you know, maybe Admiral Dalla would be cool to see, but, like, I don't see where she fits in Clone Wars, or Mara Jade, you know, characters like that. Like, where does she fit in 12 episodes capping off a series where we've never seen her? I think that storytelling we're gonna start getting in 2020 is where we're going to see, like, this jump to light speed and all that stuff coming into the canon.
The one thing I'll say that I am excited about, and it's not EU, but it is something that we've only read about in the book, and that's from the Ahsoka book, and I think we're going to see the Siege of Mandalore.
Oh, yeah.
And for me, that's the thing that I can't wait to see, because I loved Bo-Katan, and I loved that whole storyline with Maul getting basically excommunicated from by Ahsoka and Rex, and I just, yeah, that's something I'm super excited to see.
You're not the only one.
Order 66 is one of my favorite and least favorite moments of Star Wars. You know, favorite because it's so emotional and badass, but at the same time, not favorite because there are these clones that you learn that they don't follow orders. You know, they're not these meat droids, you know, the people that do everything you ask them to. Then they kill their friends and, you know, the people that they've been learning from. If you could make an episode about that, if you could go back, would you make an episode about that, or would you change how they did that or not?
I think once you've watched the Clone Wars and you watch that scene, it's heartbreaking. Obviously, we don't see, you know, I know there's other media that said, oh, they gave some Jedi a quick death or whatever. But I think that once that chip was activated, that wasn't the choice, really wasn't a question in their head. It just had to happen.
Kind of like what we learned with Wolf, right? We learned that with Wolf.
Okay,
right?
I'm going to ask, like, if these guys misbehave, that Pajama Dooku does something about it.
Okay, we have five more minutes, so as rapid fire as possible.
Hi. One of my favorite things in Star Wars now is finding Clone Wars in other media. I was just telling somebody that the Thrawn book is nothing but Clone Wars and Rebels goodness. And I'm like, we have Cad Bane and the Maul comics and so on and so forth. After the Clone Wars series wraps up, are we going to be able to still see these stories come up in the comics and the books, things like that, to continue the stories?
Hondo's in Galaxy's Edge.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Well, there you go.
And we've got the, I would say Claudia Gray's doing the Master and Apprentice book that's part of the prequel trilogy, you know, with Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon, which I'm super excited about. And I do think we've got the new comics that are coming out that are actually going to tell some stories in that era as well. They're going to be doing different eras and comics in that era, so I think that's really exciting. I do think, you know, one of the things we're seeing actually in that media, that type of media like comics and books, is we're seeing that they realize that's the era to play in. Because it's wide open, you know. And so I do think we could maybe, if we all buy Disney Direct and we all watch it and Clone Wars is a huge hit, you know, maybe they'll give us other arcs that they could just go back. The way the Clone Wars is done allows them to just do, let's do movie of the week, you know, with another Clone Wars arc.
But
so wasn't we can always do that.
Wasn't seeing Maul's bionic legs and Sam Witwer voicing him in Solo just incredible?
That was...
Yeah, just a quick. I mean, I wonder if we'll ever get to see that Cad Bane Boba Fett showdown that they showed us at Celebration. Like, how many times have we seen that thing now? It'd be nice.
Hi, Ashley Bramall. I'm the Clone Trooper Detachment Leader from my garrison. Well, sort of. It's not official because there's only like 15 of us. And there's like 100 Stormtroopers. The Clone Wars is filled with tons of action scenes. I was wondering what the panel's favorite action scene was. Just one scene. Mine is the landing at Point Rain with the Leites.
Yeah, that's good. I would say probably mine is Ahsoka running away from the Clone Troopers as she's trying to escape. That scene is pure cinema. I mean, there's nothing about that that doesn't... I mean, live action, it just feels amazing.
I think, is it the Lawless or Shades of Reason where you see Obi-Wan dressed in the Mandalorian armor and he comes out and the door opens and you see just all hell breaking loose on Mandalore? I think even just that one moment of action is some of the best I've ever seen on TV.
Yeah, I'm with you on the Point Rain because it reminds me of Saving Private Ryan. It reminds me of the beach landing on Normandy.
Yeah.
You know, all those boats blowing up and...
Obi-Wan makes it to the landing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've just literally just got a small present for the panel.
Oh, okay.
It's just a little bit of UK Garrison merchandise.
Oh, nice. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I am going to apologize. This will be the last question,
and then
we're going to do a drawing, and then we'll go out on Clone Wars Saved.
I really like the scene in Rebels where they were in that, not Rebels, in the Clone Wars, when they were in that temple where they had to find their crystals.
Yes. Wasn't that a great episode?
It was.
I had heard rumors that that was possibly supposed to be, like, its own series, and I wanted that. So, keep going.
But, every single, thing to get your crystal was different, so I'm wondering, like, why were they all different?
That's a good question. I think that they were different because, you know, each person has their own... There's something inside of you that's different from everybody else, and so the things that you struggle with won't be the things that other people struggle with. So each character had something that they were struggling with. You know, you had Gunji, who is really, really impatient. And so what does he have to learn? He has to learn patience. He has to sit there on the ice, and he has to wait for it to harden so that he can go get his crystal. But his friends have different things. Like, you know, he has his friend who's really into technology, and his technology won't help him find. So I think that's the thing, that each person has to have their own unique experience because each person is different. And the Force is strong enough to be able to figure out what that person needs and give that to them and challenge them with that. And if they can overcome that, then that means that they should have their own lightsaber crystal and that they can then responsibly use that weapon of the Jedi that is their life.
Good answer.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.